Sabrina. History was made at the Golden Globe Awards last night when Nomadland became the first film directed by a woman to scoop the Best Picture Award. The director, Chloe Zhao, also picked up the Golden Globe for Best Director, making her just the second woman to do so since Barbara Streisand won the Director's Award in 1984 for Yentl. In the post-awards press conference, inevitably, Chloe Zhao was asked about this historic achievement.
I mean, sometimes a first feels like a long time coming, isn't it? You feel like it's about time. And I'm sure there's many other before me that deserve the same recognition. I just love what I do. You know, I just really love it. And if this means more people like me get to live their dreams and get to do what I do, I'm happy.
Chloe Zhao there reacting to her success at last night's Golden Globes when her movie Nomadland became the first movie directed by a woman to win the Best Picture Award, and Zhao became just the second woman to pick up a Golden Globe for Best Director. Well, my next guest will not be at all surprised at the firsts involved in that list of awards. She is the author of a new book. The book is called Women vs. Hollywood, The Fall and Rise of Women in Film. Helen O'Hara, film journalist and editor-at-large of Empire magazine, is that author, and she joins me now from London. Well, it's the right day to be on talking about your book, isn't it, Helen, given last night's awards?
It really is. I'm so pleased for her because I've been, that's one of the things I write about in the book is the fact that awards matter to careers. And if it's only men who get nominated for these things, that really can hold women back in their careers. And it does affect, that they're the chances of getting their next film greenlit. So it's an enormously positive step. And it is depressing, like she says, that it's taken so long to come.
And awards do matter in careers. But as you tell us in the book, sometimes for a woman, the award happens and it takes a long time for that positive effect to kick in.
Well, I mean, this is it. Even somebody like Barbara Streisand, who was the first one to win, obviously, it still took her years to get her second film made. So and she's Barbara Streisand, for goodness sake, so it is a real issue. I think historically in Hollywood terms, basically women have been up against not just the fact that you have to be lucky anyway to have a career as a director in Hollywood. You have to be very good and you have to be lucky. But you also, they're up against this image that people have of directors in particular, that they are, this great driven artist, that they behave in a certain way, that they're very authoritarian. And people don't like women exercising authority and being very authoritarian. That tends to get people's backs up. So you get women directors either being described historically as, unbearable and difficult and, completely rude, or you get them described as a pushover and meek and not really knowing what they want. And it's been extraordinarily hard for women to walk the line between those two perceptions.
Yeah, I guess it might be a different use for one gender for authoritarian and for another authoritative,
Exactly.
It's a tiny difference, but it's a huge difference too. But it was not always so. And certainly if you go, as you tell us in the book, if you go back to the beginnings of Hollywood, it was a very different place initially.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. There was nobody really in the early days to tell you couldn't. So if you had a little bit of money and you could afford to buy a camera and a little bit of equipment, you could kind of set yourself up as a director. So some of the stories in the book, Alice Guy Blachet, who we think is the first woman ever to direct a film and is one of the first people ever to make a narrative film in about 1896. She started off in France and, she made little films about that. That first one was about a fairy in a cabbage patch. But she went on to make at least 1,000 films, and she moved to the US and set up her own studio in New Jersey and was very successful for a while. And you have somebody like Lois Weber, who in the 1910s was one of the highest paid directors in Hollywood at all, not just one of the highest paid women, one of the highest paid anywhere. And that's extraordinary. We're still getting back to that.
But you mentioned that the French director Alice Guy there, do we ever hear her name anywhere close to mention of the Lumiere brothers?
No, we really don't. She worked mostly with Léon Gaumont, who owned, the studio where she worked for most of her time in France. But she was literally written out of their official history when the time came to do that. So, she kind of spent most of the last part of her life writing herself back into the history books, essentially.
The focus of the book, undoubtedly, though, I think it's safe to say, Helen, is the Hollywood, and it's women versus Hollywood. Was it really the star system and the studio system in the 30s and 40s that kind of cemented a really problematic relationship between women and film?
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think basically once the big money came into Hollywood, then almost all the female directors were pushed out. There were a couple that lasted during the studio era. But really, at that point, you were mostly left with women being stars, you know, or working in makeup and costume and things like that, obviously. And the stars were really interesting because their lives were very controlled by the studios. You know, you had studios telling stars who they could and couldn't marry. You had studios pressurizing women to get abortions at one point. You had, obviously, you know, stories, horror stories like Judy Garland being fed uppers and downers, drugs, basically, as a teenager to be able to work long hours and then sleep when they told her to, you know. So it really was sometimes quite horrific.
Well, obviously, I mean, in terms of the control that was exerted over the physical appearance, how different was it for women? How much more problematic was it for women? And you mentioned abortions. Obviously, only a woman could be forced into that situation.
Yeah. Yes. So that was something that the studios, obviously, you know, like many employers today, perfectly honestly, you know, they think, oh, women are just out to get me here and cost me money by getting pregnant, which is, you know, it's only the continuation of the species, guys. But yes, you're right. I mean, it was very much about controlling people's appearances. You know, they would do a bit of plastic surgery on some people. They famously raised Ava Gardner's hairline, or sorry, Rita Hayworth's. They just, you know, they would change you as necessary. They would change your name. And they did expect you to keep your weight down. For example, there was one story that I came across that some stars were given worms deliberately so that they wouldn't gain weight.
Mm. And has that changed, one would have to ask and wonder.
Well, quite.
Judy Garland, though, her story is particularly disturbing because of the involvement of her own mother.
Yes. Her mother very much worked with the studio. She was very much one of these women who wanted her daughter to be a star and was really willing to do whatever it took to get her there. But then there was nobody, you know, at the studio side looking out for that or questioning that either. So and they were pushing her to work those long hours, and they did object to her marriage, for example, when she got married for the first time at the age of 19. And she was one of the people pressured into getting an abortion when she became pregnant a year later. So, you know, that kind of treatment, you know, I'm not a doctor, but that has got to have contributed to her problems later in life.
And you also said that part of the problem here was the audiences wanted to see her as Dorothy. Yeah. That's what they wanted. They wanted Dorothy,
exactly.
The Wizard of Oz. They didn't want a woman who was growing into, becoming a mother, et cetera, et cetera. But look, it all changed. So the wonderful 60s came along, liberation came, liberation came, the whole women's movement set in, and everything was set to rights. Yeah.
No. The weird thing is, really, I mean, if you look at the 70s in particular, which is this reputation as being such a daring decade in Hollywood and one that changed everything, and all of these new, young, exciting directors came in. But if you think about it, they were all men. And that's not because there weren't women trying to do the same thing. There absolutely were. There were women who had films shown in Cannes and who had written screenplays and who had, you know, funded their own independent films and gotten them made and were now coming to try and make something bigger on a studio level. And they just weren't allowed in the door. And this is the big difference. So Hollywood, even at that era, when it was all about new blood and new ideas, still wasn't letting women direct for the most part. So...
It comes back to this idea of the authoritarian authoritative again. There was just this feeling, how could a woman be an auteur? Was that simply that misogyny was there?
I think it was. I think it was a weird decade because there was a lot of misogyny and a lot of backlash against feminist ideas. So even when they did make a film about sort of the feminist movement, they had a man direct it and played it as a comedy. You know, they couldn't even see that a woman might have something to contribute then. And, you know, in that decade, you had incredibly talented women. Maya Angelou, the great African-American poet, wanted to direct one of her scripts that she'd written, studied cinematography so she'd really have a good case to show that she could do this. And they still didn't let her direct. She actually made her directorial debut something like 26 years later at the age of 70.
Wow. Amazing that it took that length of time.
Isn't it?
You talk about the Bechdel test, and I think people will know what we're talking about here. And so, you know, when you have two women in a scene, can they hold a conversation that doesn't mention a man or that doesn't, it isn't around a man? But I wasn't as familiar with the sexy lamp test.
Yes, I tried to gather all these different tests because Bechdel doesn't cover everything. So the sexy lamp test is essentially, could this role in a film, you know, could this woman's role be replaced by a sexy lamp? So it doesn't really do anything. It just sits there looking nice. And then there's a subtest is because sometimes there's a woman in a film whose job is to look, sit there and look beautiful, but she also explains one thing about the plot. So that's the sexy lamp with a post-it note on it.
Okay. You know. Yeah. And is it a test that unfortunately applies to many, many films?
You would be surprised and depressed, I think, how many films fail that test. You know, most Bond girls, for example, are either a sexy lamp or a sexy lamp with a post-it note.
One of the things that you touch on here, and this is not confined, let's be honest, really, to the film industry, is the idea of the confidence that's needed in many jobs to put yourself forward and to lay yourself on the line. It would seem that in film, as in many other areas in the world, Barbara Streisand's boyfriend is a great case in point here about having self-confidence. Maybe tell that story so that we're not just making a general statement about it.
Yeah, so this was Barbara Streisand was dating a guy called John Peters, who had been her hairdresser when they met. And she was developing her version of A Star Is Born that she starred in with Kris Kristofferson in the end. And at one point during this development, John Peters suggested that he should direct the movie. And she was just sort of taken aback. It's like, how does he get this, the nerve, really, to suggest this? He's done, you know, he's done nothing along those lines. And it was that that got her thinking about directing Yentl herself. And put her on that path to direct it herself. And again, it's striking, you know, that was dismissed as a vanity project because she was starring and writing, you know, and directing and everything. But, you know, when a man does it, that's described as him being passionate and multi-talented.
Yeah.
So isn't it weird that the ways that we talk about these things and the way that with the language that we use?
Film criticism, you worked in an office where I believe there were more people called in for a long time than there were women.
That is true. I mean, nothing against the Ians. They're all very talented. But yeah, I mean, that is the reality of I think, still film criticism. And so that is something I talk about in the book, because criticism, awards and festivals, you know, as long as those are all dominated by men, by male voters for their awards and male programmers for festivals, they keep choosing the same kinds of films. You know, it's all these war dramas for awards are far more likely to win than domestic dramas, you know. And we keep giving priority to these very male-driven subjects. And it's not to say they're not good and they shouldn't be there, but there should maybe be a slightly wider pool that we're drawing from, you know?
What about that idea around, you know, it came up last night at the Golden Globes, the idea of diversity across the Hollywood press. What about the representation of women within those who were making the awards, who were choosing the award winners last night, voting for them?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is a very, very small group and extremely non-representative of the population. And that has, again, been a problem throughout. You know, most of the people who make decisions in Hollywood are not just white, they're straight, white and men, you know. So that affects whose stories get told as well. And historically in Hollywood, you know, the position for Black people, for just people of color in general, for disabled people as well, for, you know, has been horrific. You know, we've had something like 30 plus Oscar winners, people playing someone with a disability, and only two of those people were actually disabled. You know, so we have these very, very strange absences in diversity discussions. And then people will say, well, it doesn't matter. And it's like, well, let's try it and see if it matters, because I think you might get better stories being told if they're told with an authentic voice, someone who's actually been in that situation.
Or at least somebody who might advise on the story if they're not going to be part of it, giving you some kind of authenticity, as you say. 2016, Barbara Streisand's getting a great run out from us this evening, but why wouldn't she, given that she was she was the first woman to win the Golden Globes directing award? Here she is in an interview from 2016 on CNN, explaining to the interviewer Michael Pereira about where she thinks we are now, well, then in 2016.
Yeah, I'm surprised that we've not come a little farther. When I made Yentl, yeah, everybody said, an actress directing? I mean, an actress being responsible for money, you know, that kind of thing. And yet today, what is it, 4% or 9% of women are directing movies? So that's very disappointing. There is an idea that's an archetypal idea about women, especially women who want to be in control of their work. That, you know, they're, or somebody powerful like Hillary Clinton. Women are suspect. It's been that way since the beginning of time. So, you know, even though so many countries have had women leaders, America, this would be such a breakthrough for women, I think. But you have to also, you know, think of women against women. There's women who are against other women. And that's sad to see.
Get your fingers off the button. It's Micaela Pereira. Okay, I misread it. It was my mistake. She is Micaela Pereira, the interviewer who was interviewing Barbara Streisand there. Why did I call her Michael? At any rate, I did. I'm speaking with Helen O'Hara this evening about her book, Women versus Hollywood, rather, The Fall and Rise of Women in Film. It's kind of depressing to think in 2016 that Barbara Streisand was still saying, you know, we still really haven't got that far. How has Me Too, how has that movement affected things? Hopefully you're going to tell me some way positively, Helen O'Hara.
I am. No, I am. I think it's really helped. So, I mean, first of all, in terms of, you know, women kind of breaking through, we're now seeing women get hired for directing big, big blockbuster movies, which did not happen before. And I think the key for that was actually Wonder Woman being a huge success in 2017. But the other thing that happened, of course, in 2017 is, as you say, Me Too. And I think that's gone to Barbara's other point about women not supporting women, because I think there's been this perception in Hollywood that it's a zero-sum game. You know, if one woman gets a role, then that means there's one role less for everybody else, because there were so few roles for women, really good ones, you know, nuanced ones. And so every A-list actress saw herself as being in competition, essentially, with every other one. And I think that's changed since Me Too, because they all got together during that time. There were so many phone conversations and behind-the-scenes meetings and kind of powwows. And it led to the Time's Up response, the setup of that organization to help women everywhere fight against sexual harassment. But it also led to them realizing that they could do more together than against each other. And you started getting way more women producing projects, not just for themselves, but for other women to star in as well, and to look for, you know, shows that they could do as a group of women together. And you get things coming out of that, like Big Little Lies or Little Fires Everywhere and things like this, you know. So I think they're really beginning to almost mobilize as a group. And I think that is going to change everything.
And that's coming together and working as a union, but as a union with each other, really. But outside of that, is there still a seething resentment from the establishment underneath all of that? I mean, I'm pretty certain there are a bundle of people trolling right now about us talking about women and women versus Hollywood. Is there still a seething resentment outside of trolling, you know, at an actual establishment level?
Yeah, there is still resentment. You still get, like, male directors, for example, at the Directors Guild of America have seriously suggested that they should in some way be compensated for any efforts to promote women directors, even though women directors are under 10% of jobs at the moment, you know. And they have genuinely, they've acted like work is being, that is rightfully theirs, is being taken from them, which is, you know, which is not the case. If they're good enough, I'm sure they'll still get the jobs. So there is a little bit of resentment. There is a little bit of backlash. You know, you hear all these people often saying, has Me Too gone too far?
Yeah.
Well, most of the men identified are still working. So, you know, probably not, I would suggest. And none of the structural changes that needed to come out of that really have happened so far. So there's still a really long way potentially to go from that.
What about me and you, and when we can buy a cinema ticket again? What can we as cinema goers do to help this situation, to move things forward?
Well, a big one is vote with your wallet. You know, go and see the films made by women, starring women, you know, early on in their run, and not just women. I do want to be clear, you know, underrepresented people generally. If there's a film starring, you know, I don't know, some Latino people, go see that. Mm. If there's a film starring disabled people, check that out. You know, be adventurous, try new stories, because I think that is what will shift the needle in Hollywood. What they respect is money, and they're seeing already, you know, with hits like Wonder Woman, with hits like Black Panther, that diversity actually does pay off, that people want to hear new, fresh stories. So if they see that consistently, then that is going to shift the needle towards more equality overall.
Follow the money and money talks.
Follow the money.
All of those cliches. Helen, lovely to speak with you this evening.
Thanks so much.
That's Helen O'Hara talking to us about her new book, Women vs. Hollywood, The Fall and Rise of Women in Film. It's published by Robinson.